Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of the Ride Along Radio Show. Today's Thursday, December 10th, 2015. This is actually show number 10, man.
Wow.
I know.
It's going by fast.
It is. Double digits. We made it to double digits. And we're all prime today. So those of you who watched the show before know that the Ride Along Radio Show is based on the premise that we will give you the benefit of our perspectives informed by our police experience, our police backgrounds. Although we do have different political perspectives, our law enforcement experiences have largely been similar. So you'll get the news of the day. You'll get the topic of the day through us, and it will not be in any way influenced by anybody's political ambitions or anybody's department's philosophy or any fear of consequences, repercussions, or retribution from the administration, basically. So I'm George Holt.
And I'm Gil Contreras, and I'm here to keep it 100.
You see 100. Here we
you
go.
You see what I'm saying?
Not mean. There you go. Not mean. Kent Lee is out today. He's he'll be back with us. Should be back next week.
Yeah.
He's out. He's out in the great state of Arizona doing Arizonian things, in his Kent Lee manner.
Which is a great place to go, by the way.
I love Arizona.
I love Arizona.
I really do. I don't get out there often enough. I was going too much at one point, but I don't get there often enough now. So. Yeah, so that's the Ride Along Radio Show. That's basically, we're here to give it to you straight, right? No filter and no chaser. Right. And today we're actually going to get into what you need to do in the event of an active shooter situation. It's been a problem in this country for a long time, but just lately we've had, seems like a concentration of them. And the one that really hit very close to home for us was last week in San Bernardino.
Right.
California. And then two days before that, it was a Planned Parenthood, or 3 days before that.
Colorado Springs.
In Colorado. So on the West Coast, we've been getting hit pretty hard with that. And I hate to say it like it's a natural disaster, because it's certainly not. But we felt it was high time to cover surviving an active shooter incident. But that's a pretty meaty topic. And once we get into that, we're not going to come out. So before that, we're going to get into our News of the Day segment. And we had a Dover, Delaware officer who was had been placed on suspension last year after a video surfaced of him kicking a suspect in the head during an arrest. And his trial was concluded yesterday, and the jury came back with a non-guilty verdict. Do you have the we have the footage ready? So we're going to watch the footage, and then we'll talk about the verdict. Okay, so now you've seen the footage if you haven't seen it before. And the officer was indicted, and he was put on trial. And yesterday the jury came back and found him not guilty of assault. And actually there was a lesser and included charge of misdemeanor assault, and he was not convicted on that either. That looks pretty harsh, seeing that footage. I mean, there's obviously we have to hope that there is more to the story than was on that video. I'd like to think, just based on my faith in the criminal justice system, the remaining faith that I have, that there was more to that footage, because the footage itself looks pretty bad. And we always say police work isn't pretty.
Right.
But there was nothing I saw in that footage that justified what happened, in my opinion. And it wasn't anything I saw that was consistent with my training or experience and what you're supposed to do in that kind of situation. But, you know, that's my opinion, and Gil's got his opinion, which is why we're both here to talk about it a little bit. And by the way, if you want to call in, the number's 323-293-3375. You can send us a tweet at Ride Along Radio, or you can send us an email to ridealongradioshow@gmail.com if you want to discuss this topic.
Right. So, you know, as I said in the beginning, I'm going to keep it 100 with you.
Please do.
yeah, you could hear on the radio that they were obviously chasing multiple suspects. there was a weapon involved of some sort. So that gives you a little bit more context. When you have multiple suspects, when you have weapons involved, you're at a higher level of awareness. And I saw the video, and if you just had the video and no audio, you would go, oh, wow, that's wrong, on the one hand. On the other hand, being a criminal is a really tough job. When you've decided that career criminal is what I want to be, I just want to victimize people for the rest of my life. Yeah, there's a downside to that.
Sure.
And especially when you start dealing with the cops. So if you're involved in a caper and you start running and you get caught and you act in any kind of way resistant to either verbal commands or physically resistant, the officers are going to overcome that. And as bad as that looked, it looks to me like it's just what, you know, what they teach you in the academy is a distraction blow. It's a blow that you give to a suspect to change his brain from, I think I want to fight with this guy or I want to run from this guy, to, oh shit, that hurts. The moment that it does, the brain switches like that, that's what allows the officers to then get down, get you into handcuffs. So as bad as it may have looked, I didn't think it was any big deal. Looked like regular police work to me.
Okay. So for me, looking at that, first of all, I do not know that they knew anything about that man's criminal history. Turns out he's got a lengthy criminal history, which after the fact, you know, makes me a little less sympathetic to his cause. But I also know that that could have been anybody else who didn't have a criminal history that the same thing would have happened to.
But who was involved in a criminal caper involving multiple suspects and weapons.
Okay. Now, that doesn't mean the person has a lengthy criminal history, though. It could be somebody
who's
got less of a criminal history or whatever. But at that point, it's not supposed to matter because we don't know.
Doesn't matter.
We don't know. We don't know what his criminal history is. We can only act on those facts available to us at that time.
Right.
Now, in terms of what I saw a person who was complying, albeit slowly. They told him to get on the ground. Now, some people may have a problem with the profanity. Officers told him, get on the fucking ground, get on the fucking ground. Well, that's just police work, and honestly, aggressive language is part of the use of force continuum.
And if I may add right quick, and when you're policing a high-crime urban area, niceness is read as weakness.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that's not to say you walk around and you curse at everybody, but in a situation like this, that sends the message that you mean business. And as a supervisor, I would much rather have my officers curse at somebody than to put their hands on them. If you can drop an F-bomb on a person to get their attention, and that means you don't have to put your hands on them, you don't have to tase them, pepper spray them, whatever, I'm all about that. And I never wrote any officer up for using profane language, and I had to defend one of my officers against a chief about using profane language because he felt that it was unprofessional, but he never worked where we worked, so whatever on him. Whatever on him. Anyway, so the profanity part, okay, no problem. They tell him to get on the ground. He is complying. Again, he didn't just pancake out onto the ground. He is getting down into what could be looked at as a prone position, or it could be looked at as a sprinting position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But here's my thing. If that officer felt that he was going to take off, if that officer felt that this person was still armed, because the officer didn't act in any way like he thought that he was armed, except for the fact that he had a gun out. The officer had his gun out. But a kick like that, a punt kind of a kick, isn't the kind of kick that's going to knock a grown man off balance. A more evenly applied shove, like to the guy's side or his hip or something, because the officer's defense was, I was aiming for his upper body.
Mm-hmm.
But that swinging kind of a punt kick, where you hit somebody in the head hard enough to break his jaw and knock him out, that's not the kind of what, me looking at that, my first thought was he was going to kick his arm out from under him. Like sweep, like you would do a leg sweep,
mm-hmm.
but just do an arm sweep because the guy had his weight on his hands.
Right.
So I figured, okay, he's going to sweep that arm out. It's going to make him go flat. The officer didn't do that. The officer did a swinging punt kick, hit the dude in the head, knocked him out. Now, he said he wasn't aiming for his head, but even if he was aiming for his chest, that wouldn't have done what he wanted it to do. It would have been a distraction strike maybe,
mm-hmm.
but the thing about the distraction strike is it has to be followed up by you doing something.
Right, you move in a handcuff.
You move in and handcuff him, but here's what happened. The officer kicked the guy. He goes down. Now, first of all, before you do that, you're supposed to holster your gun, okay? And I don't recall if he holstered his gun, and I don't think he holstered his gun. I think he holstered his gun after he knocked the guy out. So what you're supposed to do is one person keeps their gun drawn, the other person goes hands-on. So if the guy does produce a gun, then somebody can deal with that.
Right.
But in no way did that officer behave, or did his partner behave, as if they thought that suspect was armed. After he went to the ground, the officer handcuffed him, and they both got up and walked away from him. They both turned their backs on him. He wasn't searched at any point in that video that we saw. So if you think somebody's got a gun, as soon as you handcuff them, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, you know.
You're going to search them for a gun, right?
Well, you should. Absolutely.
You should. That's what you're supposed to do.
That's right. But, you know, in the officer's defense, when you have stuff happening and you know, you use force, you know, your adrenaline starts to pump. Your breath, you know, it increases, and your heart rate increases, and as that goes up, as your heart rate goes up, you start to make mistakes, and you know, cops are at the end of the day, they're still human beings,
sure,
and they're still prone to making mistakes, so,
sure.
You know, and I would just want to say this as someone who was trained and worked on the West Coast. When I've watched shows like Cops, and I watch Cops on the East Coast or other parts of the country, when I watch their tactics, I'm stunned at,
yes,
at just
me too.
The lack of awareness and officer safety.
No doubt. And so the officer, while he was acquitted, the department has not decided what they're going to do with him yet. I can guarantee you that there's a lawsuit filed behind this. Hopefully, they'll identify this at the very minimum as a training issue,
right?
And they'll deal with that because it just wasn't handled properly. And again, I don't like to be in a position to second guess officers, but we saw the initial contact with him. It's not like the video started up as they already had stopped him. We saw the whole contact from where they stopped him, contacted him, to handcuffed him. And what I saw, that wasn't right. And again, I think maybe the right questions. You know, sometimes we have a half-hearted stab at prosecuting people. And I think that maybe the right questions didn't get asked. This is not the only time that's happened. Or maybe, you know, hey, we're going to file charges on him to appease the community so we don't have a big uproar that nothing's happened. And, you know, he was found not guilty. Now, once that happens, that's it. He can't be tried for it again. And he's clean from there on out. Again, whether he retains his position in that police department is another. I don't know how big that agency is. Dover, Delaware is not a small city.
Right.
So maybe they can move him around or something. Yeah. Which they'll do sometime.
Spend some time in the kit room.
Right, exactly.
Handing out equipment.
Exactly. He'll be the house mouse, right? Or as they call him on the East Coast, he'll be the broom. He'll be the station broom for a little while. But so that's that was that news of the day. The officer's defense was that he didn't mean to kick him in the head. He was instead aiming for his upper body, and he feared for his safety and the safety of others because the officers were told that Dickerson was armed with a gun, and he was slow to comply. He was a little slow to comply. So I'm not saying they shouldn't have done something.
Right. So, and again, you know, when I saw this and you posted it on Facebook and there was kind of a thread of comments from cops on this thing, you know, it just looked to me like, this is just police work, man.
It's
not
people
pretty.
Don't want to hear that, though.
It doesn't matter what they want to hear or not. This is what they people need to hear. The truth is police work is ugly. Dealing with criminals.
Police work is not pretty, sure.
Dealing with criminals. You're talking about criminals. The guy had a lengthy criminal history.
So but they didn't know that when they kicked him in the head and knocked him out.
But it doesn't matter because that speaks to the suspect's mindset. That's why he wasn't complying like a normal person would. If a normal person, if a police officer jumps out of his car, throws it in park, jumps out, comes out with a gun, says, get on the fucking ground. Look, I'm out. I'm right. On the, you know.
Sometimes it depends on where you are. You think you could do that in Beverly Hills and you pull that on Nancy Reagan and she's going to prone herself out, or one of the ladies she lunches with? Well, she ain't proning herself out either, but she ain't getting kicked in the head behind it either.
And Nancy Reagan is not going to get choked out.
Ladies she lunches with. I use that as an example. Ladies are not proning themselves out. I don't care who pulls a gun on them. They'll clutch their pearls and call the chief's wife who's going to have lunch with them, you know, tomorrow.
When Zsa Zsa Gabor slapped that murder cop, you know, he should have just turned her around and put her to sleep. But he didn't do that.
Of course not.
However, her mindset is going to be totally different than a career criminal. All I'm saying is being a criminal is an
occupational hazard.
It's a tough gig.
Yeah, but we can say the same thing about that officer who was on trial. It's a tough gig, right?
Yeah, and he's cool, and he should go back to work. He was cleared by the system.
That doesn't mean anything. He got cleared by a criminal investigation. It doesn't mean the department's going to clear him. Because all this time, it's been told by the fact that there was a criminal matter pending. So let's see what it'll be interesting to see what they do. We'll revisit that when we find out.
Right. This is my last thing. When I saw the kick, I just said, good night. Thank you for playing.
Well, you know, he was out. As soon as you saw the kick, I knew that dude was going out.
Good night.
There's nobody stays awake through that.
Thank you for playing.
Because we don't wear Air Jordans on duty. So if you saw that kick, you knew that was going to be a loss of consciousness as a result of that
Hopefully
kick.
Hopefully when he woke up, though, he said, you know, maybe I should change.
Well, he didn't say anything because he had a broken jaw.
Maybe he thought it.
Here's what we're going to do.
Maybe he just thought it.
We're going to take a break. If you want to call us, 323-293-3375, we come back after the break. And actually what we're going to do is we're going to take a break and we're going to come back to a video intro of our subject of the day, which is surviving an active shooter incident. And this is really for those of you who work, or not even if you work any place, if you go to school, if you go to malls, if you are out on the streets, because active shooters happen anywhere. We saw that in Paris. They were just gunning people down in the streets. At church, movies, anything. I don't think there's any place they haven't touched yet.
A company Christmas party, for God's sake.
Exactly. So you could be anywhere and this happens. So the first key is to be armed, but everybody can't be armed. So short of that, we'll talk about this, and we'll talk about what to do if you're armed also. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back with a video intro, and we'll jump right into it. 323-293-3375. See you guys in a bit.
Any other turned tragic today when an employee opened fire on his supervisor and fellow co-workers.
Students, parents, teachers are asking why today after a bloody rampage plunged this campus into tragedy.
Details are just coming in, but we're being told that a heavily armed gunman opened fire this evening at the mall food court behind me. There's no official word on any casualties yet, but one eyewitness reported seeing at least six people shot.
Active shooter. A gunman or gunmen killing or attempting to kill people in a confined, populated area.
Okay, so that was an intro from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department's video on surviving an active shooter. And I think the hashtag for that is what? Run, hide, fight?
Yeah, run,
hide,
fight.
Is the three components of that. And if you want to see the whole thing, you can go on YouTube and look at the Los Angeles County Sheriff's page, and you'll find it under active shooter. Just Google.
Or DHS.
Put the search.
DHS has the same.
Same thing?
Yeah.
Okay. And the Los Angeles County Sheriff one is really good because they actually get into, I haven't seen the DHS one, but it gets into the different perspectives of the citizens who are there when something happens, what to do if someone is wounded, how you can avoid getting caught up in these situations once they start, and then what to expect from law enforcement when they arrive. And we won't get into the law enforcement response too much because, number one, it's not pertinent. You just need to know not to run up and approach law enforcement officers when they're on the scene, because they're going to be at a state of heightened awareness with the guns drawn.
They're not going to be very nice.
Right, exactly. And, law enforcement is very well trained for this. This is something we've been training for since Columbine. I was teaching active shooter response probably as early as, 2001. Mm-hmm. I've been teaching it all over the country, and I just got a call from an officer who was one of my former officers who I trained in this. He was one of the first five or six officers on scene in San Bernardino last week. And he was calling to tell me how much it seemed like a training scenario because we've been training on it for so long.
Right.
And how it just flowed. And although it wasn't exactly perfect because it was real life, it was something they felt very comfortable in. Mm-hmm. And there was officers from different agencies who showed up, and everybody's trained the same way now.
Right.
So they just fell into this. So law enforcement, once they get there, are more than capable of going in and ending the threat. That's just something, like I said, we've been training on this for 15 years, easy. But what do you do until law enforcement gets there? Because law enforcement is not going to be there immediately. It's going to take 4 to 5 minutes probably.
Yeah, four to 8 minutes for them to get there, number one. But number two, as well-trained as officers are to respond, by the time they get to most active shooting incidents, as soon as they arrive, if it's an active shooter, some person with mental illness, as you know, the Colorado Springs guy or Aurora, Colorado, or something like that, as soon as they see law enforcement, they just kill themselves.
They kill themselves, right. Or they're gone before law enforcement gets there, like we saw in San Bernardino.
Or they're gone.
Yeah, it's not too often when law enforcement actually gets to kill an active shooter because they, like you said, either they cap themselves or whatever. And they go in knowing, and they don't have an exit plan typically. And that's why San Bernardino stood out so much, is because these shooters had an exit plan.
Right.
Usually they come in and they know, I'm not leaving here. James Holmes in Aurora, Colorado. He exited, but I think they caught him in the parking lot.
Yeah, he was in. Right? Because of his mental illness, he wasn't moving as quickly as he should have. He was just kind of standing there. They just encountered him standing there at the back of the theater. But so this is why and I've been teaching active shooter response for teachers and students in classrooms, Because there is a way to survive this.
Well, see, that's interesting, because all I've taught is law enforcement side.
Right.
And you've taught the civilian side of it. So that's going to be a good conversation.
Right. Because the fact of the matter is, from the moment the first round is fired to the moment the shooter either kills himself or leaves the area, for that amount of time, you're on your own.
Yes.
As a citizen, you are on your own. If you don't have a handgun that you can return fire, or if you haven't practiced taking some action. It was interesting what you said about your buddy who was at the San Bernardino incident, saying that it felt like a training scenario. This is the interesting thing about the brain. The brain can't distinguish between fantasy and reality. So this is the value of training, because what happens is in a high stress situation, the amygdala sends out a panic signal to the frontal lobes. Your frontal lobes of your brain light up and they start scanning files. What do we do in these circumstances? If you haven't done anything, if you haven't trained to do something,
right,
you do absolutely nothing.
Right.
And this is why when I did active shooter training put on by the FBI for InfraGuard, the instructor said that in many of the videos in active shooters, in many of the videos that they saw from internal cameras, that as they were approached by the gunmen, and they didn't walk through like a Navy SEAL, they're usually just kind of walking.
Just like Columbine. Those guys are very casually strolling around that campus at Columbine.
Right. Yeah. And so what the instructor said is that when he came up to most people that he shot, most of them just did this.
Wow.
And what that tells me is their brain didn't know what to do. It couldn't send a message to the central nervous system saying, oh, do this.
Right.
You know, there was nothing there.
There was nothing. There was no file to access.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so this is why training for this is critical to surviving. The other most important, even almost more important than the gun part, is emergency medical first aid. You know, I was on the radio the day after the San Bernardino incident, most of the morning with my media buddy, David Cruz. And he said, you know, we want to know, what can we do? What should we be doing? And one of the things that I said is, you know, in order to prepare to survive, you have to go out today and take a first aid, CPR, AED class. You have to do this. You have to practice. You have to know how to stop the bleeding. Remember, when people get shot, they don't die from getting shot. They die from major organ damage and blood loss.
Right, especially blood loss.
So as a person who's in a situation like that, everybody carries a backpack these days. If you look at my backpack when I go to the movies, I have a trauma kit.
Yeah, me too.
You know, in addition to maybe a gun or whatever other weapons I might have, the trauma kit is in there. In my back pocket are the rubber gloves, you know, because I don't know where it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I just know that when it does happen, once I get, okay, I know what I'm in, now I know what to do. If I'm with my boo and we're at the movies and either she gets shot or I get shot, I can at least say, get my gloves,
right,
get my bag,
sure.
Open it up, put this, or if she's the one who's injured, I can take care of them and at least stop the bleeding and stabilize until medics get there.
And this means you need to be at the highest level of readiness that you can achieve. And I've been saying this before Sugar Free said it, by the way. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And I've been saying that for years. And any of my officers who worked for me at my other old departments or worked with me, because I wouldn't sign in their checks, they didn't work for me. But if they work with me, they know I always said that. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And that was our motto. We stayed ready because we never knew what was going to happen.
Because in a moment of stress, you're not going to rise to your highest level of expectation.
You're going to fall to your lowest level of training.
You will default to that.
That's exactly. Correct. So let's break that down. So your options are run, hide, fight. So run means obviously get off the, what we say, get off the X. That's the target zone. You get off the X. You get away from there. So,
and if I could just add, because you know, this is one thing that when I was doing a vocational college, you know, I have instructors of all ages, you know. So the question became, can you run?
Right.
If you had to, you know, are you overweight? Do you have some sort of disability? Do you have a teacher or instructor or a student with disability? They're not going to be able to just run.
No, they won't.
And go out.
Right.
What's your plan for that? You have to have thought of that in advance.
And this is why it's so important to have thought of in advance. Whenever I go into a place, I always think about, how do you get out of this place?
Correct.
And anybody who's paying attention, who doesn't text their way through the world and has their heads up and looking around, understands that when you go into a place, you need to know how to get out of it. You know, I also like to know where little things are, like where's the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that.
I want to see who's coming in.
Well, exactly. And so I sit in a place, and you can talk to anybody who's ever had a meal with me. If I sit down in a place, I'm sitting where I can watch the door.
Right.
Okay. And so that's just part of situational awareness. So that's the first thing you can do is give yourself the gift of situational awareness.
And you have to train your
attention.
You have to train your family.
Oh, definitely.
Members.
They have to understand that when this happens, you need to get behind me, you need to get down or whatever.
Or if I say to you, this is what I told my kids when I had kids at home and you know, my boo when we're out, you know, she used to go, "Why do you want to sit there?" You know, now she goes, "Is this okay?"
Right, exactly.
Because now she knows. But the other thing I said to her is that if I say to you, if I say, "Hey, get your purse, go out the back door, stand by the car and wait for me." That means don't ask me questions.
Right.
Don't
right.
ask me
just
why.
Just do it.
Just do what I tell you to do.
There's just a reason. Do it.
When I get this look and this sound and I start saying, "Get your shit, get out the back door, get by the door, by the car and stand by."
Right.
If I tell you, if I talk to you like that, I'm not playing.
Exactly. And it's time to just go do it and without a bunch of damn questions.
Right.
Okay. So run means knowing the path out. If you're at the mall, you know, where's the nearest exit? Where, not necessarily even the nearest exit, where can you go to get away from that gunfire? And in the Kenya Mall shooting that we saw last year, I believe it was, a lot of people went to the backs of those stores and they hid in those storerooms in the back part of those stores. You know, everybody knows how a mall is set up, right? So the storerooms at the farthest point of the mall, the farthest point of the concourse, rather. So people did that. They got away from the gunfire. Because here's the other thing. With many targets of opportunity, the gunman's not going to go into a deep search and start looking under stuff and looking for people when there's a bunch of people running around who didn't have the sense to run. So you be one of the people who's got the sense to run. If you cannot run or you run into a dead end, the next move is hide. Okay? Right. Hide in the storeroom. Hide under something. Get out of that person's line of sight. You know what we say, out of sight, out of mind? Get out of that person's line of sight. So there's two kinds of hiding you can do. There's two kinds of, you can take cover or you can be concealed, okay? So we say take cover. Cover is getting behind something heavy, like you might find a column in a mall or an ATM in a mall.
Or one of those atriums or fountains, if you get down under it. You know,
right, get down
that
below
concrete
that.
Concrete above you.
Right, then you've got, that's actually what we call cover. Cover means that bullets cannot penetrate it. Concealment means you're just out of sight. So concealment means you might get under a table and the gunman doesn't see you because his line of sight's up here. So you're not, you don't have any cover, but you're concealed, out of sight, out of mind. So
right. So like if intern Darren up back there just lost it right now and suddenly came up with a handgun and I get behind the curtain, he won't be able to see me, but it's not going to stop a bullet.
You're concealed, but if he knows you're there, you're not really concealed, right? So that's not cover. It's merely concealment. And Darren didn't smile on that. I'm wondering. So know the difference between cover and concealment when it comes to hiding. Again, in Kenya, the people got all the way to the back. Get down, get out of the line of sight. We also have seen people hide in plain sight by pretending to be injured or dead.
Pretend to be dead, correct.
Yeah, that happened. I believe it happened in San Bernardino last week, but I know that it's happened in numerous shootings like this where you have multiple victims and people have just laid out like they were dead, the gunman's going to bypass them.
And that takes a lot of discipline because you have to shallow your breathing, you have to close your eyes, and you just have to zone out. You can't think about, "Oh my God, is he coming? Oh my God, I hear him."
Yeah, right, because then you open one eye and peek to see if he's looking at you, and he's looking at you. Now you are dead. So but again, if you can't run, that's the way to go. Okay, you're going to have to hide. The last one is fight.
Well, I want to add something. I want to back up to the hide part.
Okay.
So if you're in a work setting or in a campus setting, and it comes time to hide, you know, when I used to teach, I taught my students within 60 seconds. And you can train your students to do this, especially at a college level. You know, within 60 seconds, we had our room darked out.
Yes.
Our door locked. We had it barricaded. And then I had my biggest students.
Right.
You know, we had both doors. So. And the thing was, and we actually practiced this. If somebody walks in and it's going to be a long rifle, if they, you know, they're going to come in and you're going to see the barrel first.
Right.
Somebody has to grab the barrel and somebody has to grab the body, and we're going to just take it right down to the ground and we're just going to hang on to them.
Yeah.
And then I'll or somebody will come up and disarm them at least. You know, so you have to, you know, part of hiding is turning off your cell phones. or at least turning
off
the
damn cell phone or something if you're not calling for help on it. Something, yeah.
Turning the lights off, blocking windows. If you can't get out through a window to get down to the ground because you're too high off the ground, then you have to secure in place, close those blinds so that your active shooter, as he's walking down the hallway, just, you know, opening door, grabs the door and it's locked. He's just going to keep moving.
He's going to bypass it because if he's looking to shoot people, he's looking to rack up a body count. The highest so far, I think, was Virginia Tech, right? 31?
31, 32.
Something like that. Low 30s, maybe even 33. So he hit in the low 30s. And I think that was the highest body count we've seen so far in an active shooter incident. But obviously, the persons come in. They always have more ammo than they expend, it seems like.
Correct.
So they come there to shoot as many people as they possibly can. Well, it's like anything else. They got to prioritize. So they're not going to sit around and try to pick the lock of the room you're in and try to kick that door when they're in a target-rich environment and there's plenty of other people to go after.
Right.
So, yeah, barricading yourself in that room and turning those lights off like there's nobody in there, that dude's just going to bypass that.
Right, and you can move furniture to block the door.
Yes.
You can move Xerox machines, push.
Whatever you got
to
do.
Whatever you can do, but you have to be thinking survival, and you have to have the discipline to slow down, breathe. You got to breathe, slow down.
And not make unnecessary noise.
Think about what you're doing. Silence your cell phones. Call for help if you need to. Let them know where you are. But then you have to just go dark. You have to go silent.
Right. And what will happen is law enforcement will come and find you.
Right.
We saw this in San Bernardino last week. We've seen this all the way back to the American invasion of Grenada when they went to get the medical students out of the universities in Grenada. Those people, there was a war going on. There were people getting shot. And so they hid. And they had to go in and coax them. Hey, this is the United States Marine Corps. We're out here coming out. So they will come find you. Just hold up. We saw the Namal shooting in Kenya. There were people who were holed up the next day. Mm-hmm. They were afraid to come out because they thought that the terrorists were still there.
Right.
And we're impersonating Kenyan authorities to get them to come out so they could shoot them. You may have to hold in place for a while. It takes a long time to really search a big building or something like a mall.
That's right. And so, you know, what you actually carry in your bag now becomes critical.
Yes.
You have to have water. You have to have something to eat, if it's power bars or whatever. But, you know, you have to, you know, your medical. So your backpack's now getting bigger, right?
Right.
Now I have a medic kit. I have water. I have food. And then whatever else, the stuff that I'm carrying in my bag.
But exactly.
You absolutely have to have all these items with you because you never know what you're going to have to do or how long you're going to have to hunker down, either in your vehicle or outside of your vehicle.
Yeah, but you just have to be prepared. And people say, well, you know, that's being paranoid. Well, that's the world we live in. And unfortunately, it's just being realistic, you know, and I'm not saying you have to go all out like a doomsday prepper and start growing your own alfalfa. I'm saying that you need to make sure.
Don't make fun of Kent. Why are you making fun of Kent?
Well,
why are you making
Kent up,
fun
right?
of Kent's alfalfa?
So while we have this situation, this political environment that we're in, this wartime environment, there was wartime footing that we're on basically as a nation, we have to be aware of that. You know, and you have to be aware that something could happen to you. And it's not just criminals that are a threat anymore. We have righteous terrorists, or we call them tangos, here on American soil. And so we need to be aware. Right. I mean, we've had them for a long time, but now we're starting to see that activity with active shootings and not just bombings. We're actually starting to see people roll up and shooting people. So,
right. But I do want to say this, though. Your chances of getting shot by a criminal and being victim of a crime are much higher
still
than even active shooter or terrorist attack.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no doubt about that, especially depending on where you live. If you live in a large urban area, you definitely are at much more risk.
However, that said, you know, all the people in San Bernardino on that day, they expected to go to a Christmas party and go
they
home.
They sure did and go home. Yep. So that just, you know, what other place? You're in San Bernardino, California, in the Inland Empire. You're in a county building and you're attending a holiday party.
Right.
Last thing you think is somebody's going to roll in there shooting people, but that's exactly what happened. So, you know, there's our components. Run, hide, fight. Now, what to expect from law enforcement? Law enforcement is going to show up en masse. And typically what happens is we show up and there's different philosophies on how many officers are going to make entry. I know officers that say they're not waiting on anybody. If they show up, they're going to go in there and they're going to try to put an end to the bloodshed. Because the longer law enforcement waits, typically, the larger the body count becomes.
Right. But I think that, you know, the standard procedure now is 2 to 3, form a little element.
Right. Well, see, and that shows you the difference there because it used to be 5. We used to say, you wait till there's 5 people here. Mm-hmm. And then you got your team leader, you got your point, left flank, right flank, and your tail gunner. And then your supervisor in the middle, and you've got a 5-man diamond, and you go in. then we start saying, you know, it takes a long time in some jurisdictions to get five people.
Right.
Depending on where you work, my last agency, I could get five people there like that. It was right. nothing to have five people on your back on a traffic stop, let alone right. something like that.
Right.
But if you work in some outlying area, you're not getting five people there for some time.
And it may be different agencies. You may get a school cop,
definitely.
A sheriff,
sure.
and a police officer.
Sure.
Those three guys have to form up, get their patrol rifles on, get their extra mags. And
go.
And especially if the shooting is still going on, if they can still hear shots fired, they got to get in there.
They got to get in there because every shot fired is probably somebody being killed, okay, or at least being shot. So officers are saying, you know what, we can't wait on five people. So then it became three. Then we're like, you know what, actually two guys could go in there, two guys and girls could go in there. And then you start having officers say, well, you know what, I'm going to go in there by myself. That's frowned upon because if there's more than one shooter, like in San Bernardino, I mean, you know, there's some cops who are well-trained and well-equipped enough that they could have dealt with both of them by themselves. But that's not too likely. So,
but if you're, you know, if you're considering firepower, like the way you win, you know, is you have to put more bullets down range than what are coming up at uprange at you.
Right, and accurately.
So if you're by yourself with a handgun, 45.
Well, by yourself with a handgun, that's one thing, yeah. But I mean, now officers rolling around with rifles and everything
right.
else. But still, one officer goes in. You know, we used to say in SWAT, one man in, one man dead. So officers still are saying, you know what, I'm going to go in because I'm not going to sit outside and let people, why hear people die. And so when people say, well, cops aren't heroes, I want to let you know there are some police officers out there who are more than willing to put themselves in harm's way to go save you. No matter what you think about the police, there are some people who are still going to come save your raggedy ass when the time comes. So I just want to put that out there. And I work with officers who are willing to do that. So officers say, I'm going to go in there. Again, we frown upon that because I feel you're going to get overwhelmed. And then the shooters now have maybe additional weaponry that you brought with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we'll get more into the law enforcement response in a second. But I'm going to give you the number to call in again, 323-293-3375. You can send us a tweet. And Tontese, thank you for the retweet just now or the mention. And send us a tweet at Ride Along Radio. And we're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll jump into this again. All right. So we're back from our break on the Ride Along Radio Show. Again, today's topic is surviving an active shooter incident.
Man, that bumper music. God,
that was
please.
Nice, right?
Yeah.
That was take six.
I like
right?
it. I like
Very
it.
Very nice. That was a suggestion by the our producer, the poet, a.k.a. Fact Frida.
It felt like I was rolling right there for
yeah,
a minute.
Yeah, that was nice. Very nice. Okay, so we're talking about surviving active shooter incident. We told you we're going to keep it 100. Tontese, hey, that was the raggedy comment. You know, just talking like I talked to you if you were sitting in the police car with us on a ride along. That's how we do. So, you know, hopefully no offense taken. But we're talking about the law enforcement response during an active shooter incident. Officers are going to be amped up. This is not a routine thing for police officers. Almost anything else we do is fairly routine. Even a high-speed pursuit is going to be a much more routine activity than something like responding to an active shooter incident. Most officers have never done that, and even the officers who have done it will probably never do it again.
Right.
It's just, fortunately, they're not that frequent yet in our society.
And they're likely to get there and then not be able to do anything. Just the standard clear the room, clear the building kind of thing. But
yeah.
they're not going to, it's you know, the firefight we saw in San Bernardino is going to be rare.
Well, yeah, and that's because they caught up with them later.
Right.
You know, but remember, by the time they got to the scene, the shooters were already off the X. They were gone. They were in the wind. But, you know, another thing is, and we're taught this in training, and this is why we do this in training, typically active shooter training, we try to make it as realistic as we possibly can. We'll bring in role players. We will bring in drama students, and we'll bring in their makeup department from the drama classes to make people up as if they've been shot with the moulage kits. So that the injuries appear realistic and the people appear to actually be injured. It's actually kind of a freaky thing if you're on a full-on police training exercise where there's this kind of a scenario. But the reason we do that is it's human nature, especially as a police officer. You see somebody who's wounded, who's a victim of a crime, you want to stop and do something.
Mm-hmm.
But in an active shooter scenario, we can't do that. And it's unfortunate, but we're going to have to hurdle the dead, as we say, and just keep moving till we find that shooter, because every time we stop to try to help somebody, that shooter's creating more victims. So our people understand the philosophy behind that is we have to get on top of that shooter and put that shooter down.
Puts that team at risk.
And puts the team at risk also, exactly. So we can't do that. You know, we call it speed, surprise, and violence of action is what keeps us safe and what gets us to where the shooter is, to put that shooter down so they don't keep making fresh victims.
Right. And the other thing is these situations, anytime I've ever been in anything where, you know, where the poop hit the fan, it was always loud, noisy, smells in the air.
Smells in the air, for sure.
Music, lights, you know, and you know, in San Bernardino, they had the fire extinguishers, sprinklers.
Yeah.
So there's water falling, people screaming, the smell of gunpowder in the air.
Yes.
You know, it's a chaotic situation. You got to settle your mind down, focus on your job and what you're trying to do.
And fortunately, most police officers, anybody who's been on the job for a while, depending on where they work, and actually anywhere, doesn't really matter. If you've been on a job for a little while, you've seen some gore.
Right.
You've seen human brains before. You've seen people's internal organs out of their bodies. You've seen all that kind of stuff. But to see all that at once and to have to move past that to go deal with that person is it's kind of a freaky thing. But again, that's why we train that way.
It's counterintuitive to the human nature.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So we try to train that out of the officers so that we move past that. And I know that grandma's on the ground there and she's been shot in the hip and she's trying to drag herself to safety. We got to push past her. And hopefully somebody will come behind us,
right,
and start trying to render aid. But right now we got to get on top of that person. So that means that anybody we see is going to be met probably with guns up until we figure out who you are. Which brings me to another point. A lot of people now have concealed carry permits, even in the state of California. People think that, oh, there's no concealed carry in California. That's not true. It just depends on which county you reside
in. It's only in L.A. County, apparently.
Only in L.A. County, right, that you're probably not going to get one, at least in Southern California. San Francisco County probably doesn't do them either. But pretty much every other county in Southern California issues concealed carry permits. So that means there's people who are carrying guns, civilians who are carrying guns, off-duty police officers who are carrying guns, plainclothes police officers who are carrying guns. So people say, well, if that happened and I would go jump in and do this, you may be putting yourself at risk by doing that, because when law enforcement shows up, we don't know who's who in the zoo. We saw this with the situation with Gabriel Giffords shooting in Tucson, Arizona. Jared Loughner was actually disarmed by a bystander. And I don't know if he had paused to reload or what, but I think he had paused to reload and bystanders overpowered him. He was stripped of his gun and somebody was standing over him, holding him at gunpoint. A concealed carrier came in from the grocery store next door, heard the gunshots. He comes in with his gun out, and he's actually going to engage the Good Samaritan, because all he knows is there's people shot, and there's a guy standing with a gun in his hand.
Right.
So you have to really be concerned about that. And what I would tell anybody who's got a gun, don't go get involved in that. You hole up and protect those people around you. Mm-hmm. We saw this at LAX. We have a phone call, and we'll address the phone call, and we'll get back to the LAX shooting incident.
Okay.
Hey, caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, George, my name is Soch. I'm calling from Long Beach.
Soch, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I love the show, and I love what you guys are doing with the two perspectives. So that's great. And the topic today, man, that's a good topic. So,
well, hey, I mean, I really appreciate it, man. Are you one of those guys that gets out and trains and stays on top of his game?
I try to. Training is a big part of everything. So.
Yeah, man, listen, we're just trying to put out some good information to people and trying to give people information that actually is going to be useful,
right,
in their everyday life. And you know, it's not just an active shooter, an act of terrorism. What if you get in a car accident?
Right.
You should still be prepared.
Right.
And that's much more likely, right?
Merge your earthquake.
Yeah, anything.
Someone gets injured.
Yeah, we're all about telling people to be prepared, man.
Right.
So we appreciate the call, Soch from Long Beach.
Yeah. Question for you guys.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of, like, hero mentality, right? So, you know, some people, they think that because they have a CCW or they carry a gun, they carry any type of weapon, they feel that they're capable of, I guess, saving a life, getting into the action and just, like, you know, like, stopping an active shooter. Like, that mentality, I think, is kind of a false courage.
Well, yeah, and you know what it is, man. I call that the too many schools, not enough gunfight syndrome.
Right.
Because what happens is people are prepared, and there's guys who can go out and shoot the hell out of these targets, and they're very comfortable and competent with their pistols. But the fact of the matter is, in a real-life scenario, targets move, they shoot back, And then there's good guys coming in with bigger guns than yours, and they don't know who you are. And this is the point I was just making when you called, actually, is that the best thing you can do if you're a concealed carry person is that you need to have your gun at the ready, and you need to hole up someplace in a store or something and keep those people around you safe. We saw this in the LAX shooting. We had LAX shooting on November 1st, 2013. We had John Paul Ciancia going to Terminal 3 at LAX, and he shot up a bunch of people. We saw that, right? And before he was actually taken down by two airport police officers who were able to interdict him. But the follow-on officers were able to put people into bathrooms because we didn't know how many shooters there were or anything at the time. They were able to herd people into bathrooms and stand by. And there's pictures of officers that people took with their cell phones that have all these people in back of them. And one of those officers, Barry Wilds, B. Wilds, has got his gun standing there, and he's blocking anybody else from coming in that restroom because he's basically sheltering those people in place.
Right.
That's what I suggest any concealed carry person or anybody who's an off-duty cop or anything carrying a gun, you need to try to protect those around you. You don't go try to jump into that fight because you don't know how many gunmen there are. You don't know if somebody's going to suspect you of being a gunman. You don't know if there's a guy just like you in the next store is going to see you running with your gun in your hand. He's going to engage you. Mm-hmm. And then we have what we call green on green or blue on blue, right? So the best thing you can do is stay put and make sure the violence doesn't come your way. And that's what I would encourage people to do.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, like, I keep playing the scenario over and over in my head, like what I would do.
And you should. That's a good thing you played in your head. That's what people should do. That's the first step of preparation, actually.
Mental gymnastics.
Yes.
Right. And like you said, like I would probably stay put. Like I would only take a shot if I know I could, you know, like put that shot down. But
then, you know, we got to have target identification and everything else.
Exactly.
And I would say if somebody's coming in on you and that person's a threat, then you deal with them. But I would discourage anybody from trying to jump into the fray. It's just not a good suggestion. But, hey, thanks for your call, Soldier, and we appreciate the support, man. I'm glad you're listening to us.
Cool, definitely.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, in the San Bernardino thing across the street, before any law enforcement ever got there, there was a business owner who has a CCW.
Yes.
And, you know, he armed up, got his employees in the room, went outside to see. He actually saw one of the shooters walking to the black SUV that they later encountered and driving away. So, you know, he could have run out there. He could have, you know, but he didn't have enough information. He thought that was the shooters. He thought that was them. But he didn't have enough information. So he just went back, locked his employees in the building.
And then played it safe.
Stood by the door.
We had that happen at that Umpqua Community College shooting up in Oregon, too, about 2 or 3 months ago. There was a concealed weapons permit holder on campus, and he decided to stand down because he said, I wanted to make sure if the person came in the classroom that I would deal with him. But he didn't run out there to get involved. And, you know, we say discretion is the better part of valor, right? So that's actually true in this case. And you don't want to get out there and end up getting yourself killed. Because, you know, even though we have the best of intentions, we see where that can sometimes lead. So,
right. And you know, as a male Hispanic, I'd be afraid.
Right.
When the uniformed guys start arriving, you know. So I just say, you know, if you're carrying a gun and you can legally do it or you just decided you're just going to do it or whatever, I just say, just because you have the gun, just because you have the training and experience, which I have both, just because I have all of that doesn't necessarily mean I'm even going to take it out.
Right.
I may just watch the whole thing and then make a decision about what I do.
Right. Exactly. You know, so that gun is not for you to go out and save America with. It's for you to save yourself and those in your immediate vicinity. And you do that by playing it smart.
Correct.
And again, even us with our advanced levels of training and our preparation and everything else, that's not going to be our response, is to go out there and try to shoot it out in the middle of the mall.
Because I realize, you know, a rifle to handgun, I'm probably outgunned, number one. Number two, I don't have any kind of body armor on because I'm just wearing it in my T-shirt.
And that guy, and again, we just said the shooters always bring more ammo than they use.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of us run maybe one additional magazine. You know, if you're smart, you've got at least one additional magazine. But still. So, again, to recap that, so we say, to survive an active shooter incident, your options are run, hide, or fight. You run, you know where to run by being prepared and by looking for exits and just having some situational awareness. Hiding means cover and or concealment. Getting out of the line of sight of the shooter, taking cover behind something they can't shoot at you through, as Gil said, the base of a fountain or an ATM or something that's actually going to stop bullets, a column in a mall, like in a mall food court, all these columns, right?
Right.
Usually you can take cover behind something like that. And again, I can't think of a place or an environment where we have not had a mass shooting.
Yeah.
From churches to schools to airports.
And you have to listen. You know, you hear shots. And once you hear no more shooting, they're reloading. That's your time to move.
That's your time to move. Exactly right. Exactly right. When there's a pause. Now, this last thing we had, it seems like the first active shooter incident we had was two shooters, Klebold and Harris at Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last two, the Farouk couple in San Bernardino. Typically, active shooters work alone.
Right.
But it's come out now that Farouk and his neighbor, was it Vasquez?
Marquez.
Marquez. His next-door neighbor, they apparently had planned to do something like this a couple of years ago.
Right.
And got cold feet and didn't do it. And then Farouk, I guess, got his wife involved, and then they went ahead and did what they
right.
did.
Right, and if you listen to the government, try to lead you to believe, oh, it's just these two, nothing to see here, no cells. Let me just tell you, these guys are everywhere. They're in all 50 states.
Well, it's even worse. Like to me, it's even worse if there's not a cell. Because with a cell, at least maybe we can get somebody to flip, and somebody would give somebody up. But when you got these lone wolves operating all over the place, you don't know about them until they pop up.
Right, that's right.
Dylan Roof wasn't on anybody's
that's
radar.
That's why there's no way to prevent this with databases. The only way you can prevent any kind of shooting out like this or active shooter is somebody close to these people have to tell.
Yes, exactly right.
You have to tell.
You see something, say something. Start snitching.
Stop protecting your crazy family member or your crazy
or your neighbor
or your friend or whatever.
Yeah, I want to start a new hashtag. It's going to be hashtag start snitching. Because, again, if you see something, say something. There was somebody who was going to say something who saw some suspicious activity and said, oh, well, I don't want people to say that I'm racially profiling them.
Right.
So they didn't say anything. And that person got to live with that forever. I mean, that's something you carry for life.
And I blame the government for this. I blame the Obama administration for this. This pushing of political correctness. We don't want to offend anybody. F that. Today, I'm offending, okay? If I see something crazy, I'm going right to jrick.org
and
I'm going to make a report.
And let the government sort out what's to happen next.
That's
but
right.
You should certainly say something.
That's
all. The stakes are too high not to do that. So
I'm going to tell.
Yeah. As they used to say at LAX, we going to tell. For those of you who remember that. So, so shout out to Soch for the call and shout out to Tiz. Been meaning to shout out Edwin Tiscarino, the Corona Police Department, formerly of the Housing Authority Police Department. He always watches. Thanks, Tiz, for your support. And we're going to start wrapping here. And again, if you have any suggestions for future show topics, suggestions for your future guests, send us an email at writealongradioshow@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at Ride Along Radio. You can like us on Facebook, which is Ride Along Radio Show. You can follow us on Instagram, which is Ride Along Radio Show. And again, our Twitter is just Ride Along Radio.
Right. How much time do we have left?
What do we got left? 1 minute.
I'm trying to do this in 30 seconds then. In regards to the fight part, in the Aurora, Colorado shooting, when the shooter, he was shooting people at the back of the theaters, they were popping up to run out because they were panicking. There were people right by his feet. There were people who said, his boot was by my head. And because they hadn't trained, they were just standing like this, hoping they wouldn't get shot. And when his AR-15 jammed and he looked down to clear it, he didn't know how to, and he was taking it off and going to a secondary weapon. All somebody had to do was just grab both feet and stand up. And it would have been over.
Exactly.
You have to train to fight.
Well, and you know what? I would hope that nobody would just sit there. Like, again, no one will ever be able to hijack an aircraft with box cutters in this country anymore.
That's right.
Because nobody on the plane is going to let them do it.
Nope.
Because we know what it means. So you got to do something. You know, that fight part's very serious. And if these guys know that it's not going to be their power play wet dream, that everybody's going to run from them, but some people will turn on them and start attacking them, we might see less of this go on, actually.
If you're on a flight and somebody picks out a pen and starts yelling something crazy, stand by for ass whooping.
Yeah, exactly right. All right. So listen, we're going to be back next Thursday, December 17th, right here at MorrisMediaLive.com. And we will see you again. See you then. You guys be safe and take care. Thanks for joining us.